Good evening, and welcome to another episode of Nigeria Politics Weekly. As usual, my name is Michael, and co-hosting with me is Phoenix. Today we have one guest. His name is Samuel Atiku. Atiku is a public policy consultant. Now, we've got three topics to discuss. The first topic would be the trip to the IMF by the central bank governor, Yemi Cardoso. He gave a press conference there that seemed to trigger a lot of debate in the public space. Secondly, we'll discuss the leadership crisis within the opposition party, the People's Democratic Party. We were hoping somebody from the party would be here on the podcast this week, but they can't make it. So hopefully we'll have somebody from the party next week. But yes, we'll discuss the crisis within the party. And thirdly, we'll discuss the attempted arrest of Governor Yahaya Bello, or the former governor of Kogi State, the attempted arrest by, or his attempted arrest by the Economic and Financial Crimes Commission, the EFCC. So on to our first topic, Yemi Cardoso. Phoenix, they call him Cardi B. Apparently, Cardi B gave a press conference and it seemed to deliver to generate a lot of debate in the public space. Why is that, Phoenix? Was there anything controversial that Cardi B said that led to this level of discourse?
Hi, Michael. Hi, Atiku. Thanks for being here with us again today. Hello, listeners. I think if you listen to and also read the excerpts of this discussion that he had, at the IMF spring meetings over the past, I mean, the meetings have happened over the past 2 weeks. There's really nothing controversial in my book, but you can't blame Nigerians and the current climate of low trust, given what we've seen of the CBN over the past 8 to 9 years, given what we've seen of this current administration, which is about to complete its first year, and also some of the utterances and strange things that we've heard from this CBN governor, who has, I'm almost convinced now that he has almost like a Jekyll and Hyde personality. I mean, we've talked about my expectations for the CBN, my low expectations for him. I mean, and what he needs to do to be, in my book, be successful. On the one hand, he has made a stated claim to do exactly what I expect him to do, and I have seen certain moves in that direction. But on the other hand, he has also been quite the politician, making some of these political statements that are unfounded and, just populist type talk, part of which led to the drama that were that Nuhu Ribadu, enveloped himself with Binance and all that nonsense. So, of course, given that low trust environment, people take whatever he's saying, with a grain of salt. And I think the key part where people were a bit, where the controversy, and I saw a lot of discussions online on Twitter particularly, was around the question that was put to him about defending the Naira. The view of everyone is, look, you have definitely been defending Naira, which has been largely successful if we look at the drop from, 1,900 Naira to the dollar to about 1,100 to the dollar last week. It's now inched up to 1,200. And in parallel, the move in the country's reserves. So with the significant drop in the reserves, with the amount of liquidity in the marketplace, and with the drop in the naira in the value of the naira to the dollar, People have been speculating that, oh, CBN has been intervening to, correct, in quoted, the slide of the naira. But he was at pains to say it is not their intent. Of course, I mean, they intervene, but that they want to get to a point where they would not need to intervene, but it is not their stated intent to defend the naira. That really the movements that people were seeing were based on, debt obligations being due, and they needed to, and naturally payments would be made. So you see a shift, but, and all that kind of stuff. So people are like, well, some people don't believe, some people believe. The question is, the key takeaway for me was he's putting forth a very clear policy position. It is not our intention to defend the naira. That is a strong policy position, and I'm one that I fully agree with, because I don't believe that it is the central bank's job to be spending reserves defending the naira. Of course, intervene from time to time if you sense that, there's an anomaly and a correction can be made, something of that sort, but not to make it your stated aim, as we saw with the likes of Buhari and Emefiele and the nonsense they were doing, which did not do anything but destroy the naira. So, but the thing is, when you make such a stated position, some people are bound to test your resolve on that position, especially when you are not particularly saying that from a position of strength. We know the conditions, the situation of the foreign reserves that he looks after, and so one just hopes that, having made that stated position, if his resolve is tested, that he holds firm, because that's what then builds trust. And that's when people will see that, okay, this central bank is predictable, will do what they say they will do. And the markets and the economy can therefore make plans on the basis of, okay, we can be certain of what the central bank will do and how it will behave. And therefore, we have a stable environment in which to invest, in which to participate in the economy. That's the biggest and most important thing that we need from the central bank. I keep saying it. It needs to be boring. It needs to be predictable. It needs to show that it's in control. It needs to signal to the marketplace and let people be able to make the business choices and decisions, knowing fully well that there's a stable environment, knowing fully well that if they do something today, they won't wake up tomorrow and find a different landscape. So that was my key takeaway from that.
Thank you, Phoenix. But I just need to get some clarity because I watched the video as well, and it did not seem clear to me what he was saying because I got the impression that he seemed to evade the question. Because a number of commentators have rightly said, look, we can see that there are monthly depletions of the currency because they seem to think it's clear that you're defending the naira. Well, he's saying, no, we're not doing that. We're only intervening from time to time. So if somebody were to ask you, Phoenix, in a yes or no, in your view, has Yemi Cardoso or Cardi B, has he been defending the naira or not?
I think it's difficult to say definitively from the outside if he has been defending Naira or not. I think, yes, it is clear that he has intervened. But we're talking about a short period of time. Defending Naira is not something you do over a month or 2 months, right? It's something you have to do consistently. If he continues to do this and we continue to see the fall in the reserves, then you can definitively say that he is defending the naira. There's no doubt that there has been some intervention. But he is also saying that, look, there were debt obligations that were due and we needed to pay them. And so we need to see consistent, drawdowns and, consistent performance in trying to get the naira to a certain position before we can conclusively say he has been defending the naira. For example, we've now seen a sharp uptick on the naira in sorry in the dollar against the naira. From it came down to almost, I think it almost got to 1,000. Now it's trading at about 1,200. Are we seeing him continue to do the same? That would be the question. So for me, I cannot, because I don't have access to the books. I don't know who, what, I mean, what they've done. Yes, we see the movement in the reserves, but it's been such a short window that I cannot say definitively that yes, he's taking a position to defend the Naira.
Well, Atiku, I think you need to I need to bring you into the conversation at this juncture, because the question, which is the point people are making, that look, you are clearly defending the Naira. You're saying it's a short-term position, but the reality is you don't even have the reserves to maintain this for the long term. So what in effect you're doing is defending the Naira for a short term. A number of people are going to get cheap dollars and hold on to them. And then the point at which you've lost the firepower to carry on this defense, a number of people who have accessed cheap dollars will then cash out. So in your view, Atiku, do you agree with what Phoenix is saying, or do you think the skeptics have a point?
I would say I agree 100% with what Phoenix has been saying. It's a complex, I would call it monetary policy itself, and then the foreign exchange system is complex enough, and it's not one plus one is equals to two. It's closer to rocket science than it is to basic arithmetic. So yes, in truth, the foreign exchange reserve of Nigeria had come down by almost about $2.2 billion. Coincidentally, around the same time, the Naira was appreciating. So people put one and one together and assumed that the reason why that's happening is because of the central bank maybe selling those dollars to broad exchange operators and all those kind of things, and that's what is driving it down. But if you look closely at what has happened in the last 2 months, I recall when the Monetary Policy Committee met, the first thing they did was actually to increase the cash reserve ratio. Essentially, you have to keep more cash with you as a bank to justify before you can lend. So historically, for you to lend 100 naira before, maybe you have to keep 30 naira. The central bank jacked it up to like 40 naira, meaning that they are very limited cash in circulation that can go after that dollar. Remember, it's a demand and supply market. So we are looking at both sides. There's a supply component, which is the foreign exchange, but there's also the demand component, which has to do with the Naira. So what has happened to the Naira is that the volume of Naira available to buy the dollar had been reduced. In fact, it fell from about, if you look at the base money, it fell from like 24 trillion to about 21 trillion in between January and February. That is a contributory factor. That's one. Two, if you recall also, the Central Bank of Nigeria also announced that foreign currency would no longer be used as collateral to back Naira-based loan. I disagree with that policy, but notwithstanding, what it means is simple. If you have your dollar, assuming you have $1 million, and you're bringing it to Nigeria before, all you need to do is just to say, oh, Bank ABC, I have $1 million. This is the B bond. Borrow me, say, 1 billion. I mean, I have $1 billion in my account in a B bond kept somewhere abroad. Can you please borrow me, say, 100 billion? And the bank borrows me 100 billion on using that as a collateral. What the central bank is saying, you can't use that as collateral, meaning that you have to look for a Nigerian-based asset. What it means is that if I'm desperate to get something in Nigeria, that's 100 billion or 100 million or the dollar I'm keeping, I have to bring it into the system and then I have to spend it. That's what it means in a sense. Of course, I disagree with some of those policies, but those policies also have their own contributory factor to what has happened. The third bit itself is also I'll call it this sloughing system that you see announcing to banks that they have to recapitalize. That's also a trigger point, because one of the biggest drain, in fact, the biggest drain on foreign exchange in Nigeria is not those people going to have fun abroad. It's not people buying grapeless seeds. It's actually the Nigerian banking system moving this capital to invest maybe abroad or go and buy a bond or something. Now, because they have to capitalize locally, some of these banks are now beginning to keep that money in-house. And the implication is not far-fetched. It means that there's very limited naira running after the dollar. And that explains why you see that movement. But just like Finis also said, it's not enough to look at the data. I've seen people celebrate Nigeria is the best performing currency based on 2 weeks' data. You don't do that. You see that you compare year on year, you compare last year's number to this year, or you compare year to date. Nigeria is nowhere near, the naira is nowhere near where it should be in terms of how it has depreciated in the last few months. So to put everything in context and then pull everything together, I would say the combination of positive policies that the central bank had implemented in the last few months that may have contributed to what we are seeing in the market. But we would also say that it's important to be very cautious before somebody jumps into conclusion. Market react. It's human being that operates this market, and market reacts in any way possible. Things can go. It's enough. I think we need enough time to take in enough data before we can now start drawing conclusions to say, okay, the central bank is indeed defending the naira. Well, if we say from the policy standpoint, if the central bank actions in the last few months had been designed to defend the naira, yes, you are absolutely correct to say that. But if you say, oh, is the exchange rate variability, the decrease, I mean, reduction in the foreign exchange reserve of Nigeria that is reading that, I don't think we have enough information, we have enough evidence to conclude that. So I'm going to sound like an economics. I would say, we're not sure what is happening, but we know certainly there are a lot of policy happening simultaneously. And then incidentally, that's responsible for what we are seeing. But again, relationship is never cause. I mean, it's never the cause. I mean, causality and relationship are not the same thing.
Thank you, Atiku. Phoenix, it seems you and Atiku are on the same side. But then there's another question or an issue that's been raised by commentators. For example, I'm sure you know Andrew Ali, who's a prominent financial player. One of the things he said is, look, the market fundamentals have not changed. Inflation is still at record levels in Nigeria. The economy is not growing significantly. So it's hard to explain rationally why the naira has suddenly appreciated from all the way from 1,800 to closer to 1,000. How do you respond to that comment, Phoenix?
I think the first part of what you report him saying is correct. The fundamentals have not changed. The structure of the economy has not changed. We have not all of a sudden started to export more and therefore earn more FX. There's nothing that is on, there's no underlying strength that the naira has suddenly gained that drives that. So it's the second part of it is about is therefore some of the things that Samuel Atiku was talking about. It was simply a question of demand and supply within a short window, which is why I said earlier, look, this has happened in too short a time frame for us to come to a judgment, and we can already see another uptick happening again. So there's the combination of all the policy effects, there's a combination of all the things that they've been doing to reduce demand, as Samuel Atiku took us through a number of instances. And also, we've also seen some supply in the guise of loans that they've taken and all of that that has brought in some inflow. The question is, back to what Andrew Ali was saying, until you fix the fundamentals, this will only, almost like, excuse me, paper over the cracks for a short period of time. And then you will get to the, it will again become obvious that you do not have that organic ability for, for FX to exist in your economy, and you would naturally have some pressure again, especially As I was saying in my first time I was responding, that your CBN governor is coming out in a very bullish manner to say we do not intend to intervene. For me, that's a serious policy position because, again, I keep saying, like I said before, if somebody decides to test that and short the naira, for example, because your guy has said he's not going to intervene, that can be a play, a very legal play that people can then do because they've heard the comments of the central bank governor. So for me, it's a question of time, which brings me back to the more critical point. When we talk about underlying factors within the economy, the CBN can only do so much, and I'm sure I've become a broken record in saying this. The CBN can only go as far as monetary policy instruments will allow it to go. It is not the CBN's job to remake or reshape the economy. The CBN has clear mandates. Inflation, using its monetary policy tools, banking sector supervision, and making sure that that financial sector that is important, operates in the way it should operate, being banker to the federal government and all those kinds of things. Signaling and the kind of things that it needs to do. It is not the CBN's job to try to create those underpinning fundamentals. That's on the fiscal side. And so we have been saying we're now almost a year in just a little over a month. This administration will be 1 year in. What really have Tinubu and Edun done to reshape the economy they inherited to begin to put us on the path? Because it's not going to happen overnight. All of the destruction that Buhari and gang, with Tinubu as a willing ally, did over the last 8 years. But we need to go, set us back on that path so that there's confidence from the private sector and people to begin to invest again to fix those underlying things so that you can then have the organic strength that the naira requires to be at least stable. The value can be what it needs to be from a perspective of what does your economy offer and why should anybody buy the naira? That's not the issue. The issue is more of the volatility. The issue is more of people don't know whether they wake up tomorrow and the naira has devalued by, 3 times or 10 times. If it is stable, even if it's at 1,000 naira to the dollar, people can plan, they can do their business. So you need the fiscal side to wake up. You need Edun to wake up and show up to his responsibilities so that that can happen.
Thank you, Phoenix. But I need to bring Samuel Atiku on this issue that Phoenix has raised. So you have the fiscal side and the monetary side. So Cardi B or Yemi Cardoso is doing his bit. What is Wale Edun doing on the fiscal side?
I mean, that's a million-dollar question. I keep asking that same question repeatedly. The coordinating minister of the economy, the building block of, I'll call it, just like Finney said, the building block of the economy should be the real economy. How you transfer wealth from the rich and then ensure that it's evenly distributed across board. Essentially, the fiscal actions you take. Now, how do you take those fiscal actions? The first one is through taxation. You tax people. If you look closely at it, the kind of how we mobilize resources in Nigeria in terms of taxation has been riddled with a lot of issues. The last time I recall, there was a committee that was set up. Remember, that was being led by this, what's his name again? If I remember his name, I'll come back to him to actually go around the country, engaging people and trying to come up with a position paper. I guess the position paper had been submitted. I don't know where it is there. That's a big ball. There's a concept also of equity in how we tax people. I mean, people always say Nigeria always tax poverty. You cannot expect somebody earning 30,000 naira. Transportation is up, everything is up, and then the person is still paying a percentage of tax. It doesn't make sense. Those issues are there. In terms of businesses, there are big balls that we need to throw at ourselves. ask ourselves big questions. Waivers that people enjoy. I mean, just imagine one of the billionaires in this country, if you look at his effective tax rate, is lower than that of the people, the Okada riders, that people are accused of not paying tax. There are big questions there that we've not really looked at. So there's a big question around the tax systems in Nigeria that need massive reform, and we've not heard anything about it. If we can raise, I hear this big rhetoric that we need to double revenue, we need to do this. If we could raise our tax base and then increase tax revenue, and when I say increase tax revenue, I know the APC government will soon jump in to say they've increased tax revenue. On what basis? The naira had been devalued. So when I say in terms of real time, when you debase the inflationary effect away from it, let's see you increase tax revenue in real terms. We can say, okay, do we have resources enough to begin to do one, two, three things? That's one big question to talk. I mean, if we want to talk about the entire political economy of taxation in Nigeria, we'll not leave here. The second issue has to do with how we also spend funds. And we know we've raised a lot. If you look at the budget, it's riddled with a lot of frivolous items. In fact, the way we budget in Nigeria is, I'll call it, is just like we are at the mercy of the president's will and wishes. Nobody does that. Even the free country of the world, the US, they have discretionary spending, they have non-discretionary spending. Things that affect citizens, they don't put it in the hands of a Biden or a Trump to come and make those decisions. The legislator steps in, they come up with rules and laws, and then they adding it up to make sure that nothing happens to those funds. In Nigeria, we have some form of semblance. One of it is about 1% of our CRF, our consolidated revenue fund, going into a pool of fund that we call the Basic Healthcare Provision Fund. And if you go to most primary healthcare centers in the villages around us today, especially at least one per every ward, you will see some remarkable transformation that has happened with that tiny bit of money, less than 1% of revenue going into that fund. You could see the transformation that has happened. Now, in the US, for instance, if you see the UK, they make sure the legislators make sure that things that affect citizens are locked in by laws. Now, we expected when Cardoso was not in government, he was one of those people that was talking about some of those things. I mean, I say Cardoso, sorry, Wale Edun was one of those people that was talking about, oh, there's a need to do those things and make it. But now we've not had anything in that mean. Then the big ball question also around reducing the cost of governance. Well, you see them talking about, oh, we need to do ABC. I think recently the Federal Executive Council approved the merger of some institution. But again, the cost component is not there. We need to ask a whole lot of questions. Now, I just stepped into big ball, right? Within the expenditure space itself, we talk about cost of governance, but there's also the cost of governance. And nobody's talking about that. Things like theft of crude oil, we allow certain things to happen. Tompolo will be given contracts. Non-state actors will be empowered at the expense of the working poor and the have-not. MC Oluoma will be collecting levies from people at the expense of the working poor and the have-not. Those things are cost of governance. Government itself, we allow it for political exigencies. How soon do we collapse some of those things? That's not been done. Now, when we go to the third bit of the fiscal space itself, it has to do with how we mobilize debt, how we raise finance. Their big issue, biggest component of Nigeria's borrowing is short term in nature. Now we are building a road from Lagos to, say, Calabar. How many trillions? Most of that will be financed by short-term borrowing at 30%, which moves with inflation. What are we thinking in terms of ensuring that we have a more sustainable pathway to address some of those issues? In fact, they may even print money and use it to do it. We've not had very stern policy stand in that space. That's just on the budgeting part itself. When you come into the policy landscape, in Nigeria, we deliver roughly about, I think the last time I did the mapping, we have about 4,815, 4,815 services that the federal government deliver to the citizenry. Virtually all those services are littered with a lot of corruption. And the role of the Minister of Finance itself is to begin to build in what I call checks and balances to make sure that people don't continue to steal our commonwealth. That's not been put in place. So my take here is that, yes, just like Finis has rightfully said, the fiscal governance system in Nigeria seems to have been abandoned and nothing seems to be happening. And it's quite disappointing that 1 year after, we've not had any policy stand, we've not had significant movement in that space. And until we fix that, regardless of what the monetary authority is doing, definitely we'll be back to square one. And as long as we're back to square one, we continue rolling in circles. So now people are complaining about electricity bill going up. By the time the naira falls to 2,000, just imagine it has to double. The price of PMS will go up. Inflation will follow suit. Everybody complains. So we begin to create massive level of massive level of poverty rather than actually beginning to address this thing. So, Michael, that's where we are. In terms of this, I think it's a complete disaster, just to say the least.
Thank you, Atiku. But our time is up for this topic, so we need to move to the next one, which concerns our friends in the PDP. Phoenix, there seems to be a crisis within the People's Democratic Party. What is going on?
Michael, did you say there seems to be, or there is, and has been
It depends who you ask. Some people claim there's nothing going on, that it's a family affair.
Ah, I
Atiku's
see.
loyalists say there's no crisis, while some others say there is. So I suppose the question is, what do you say, Phoenix?
Well, given that we're outside of an election cycle, so maybe it's okay for us to say that it's a family affair since it doesn't concern us on the national stage. But I mean, there is clearly a crisis, and there has been one in my mind for at least a year. And there seems no end in sight. When I look at the PDP, and a lot of people always tell me that I'm harsh on the PDP. I'm harsh on the PDP because, my expectations are different. I judge you based on what I expect and what I've seen. It's not to say that PDP represented utopia in terms of how political parties should operate. I mean, no one expects any political party to absolutely be paragons of virtue. I mean, even in the US, with all their years of political savvy and knowledge and experience, we've seen the nonsense that is going on. Look at the Grand Old Party and how they seem to have been subjected to the cult of one. So, I mean, political parties can be messy, but even in your messiness, there should be some semblance of sense. And for me, when I look at the PDP over the last 12 to 18 months, it seems there's a total absence of that sense. And it started with them, deciding to go against their own ethos, which we talked about. We've all witnessed this from the last election cycle, where people were contorting themselves into all sorts of things to defend, the idea that they were going to put forward a northern candidate after Buhari had completed 8 years, despite the cries from people who had traditionally voted PDP and said to them, guys, do the right thing. We really want to kick out APC, but we also want to do it in the right manner. Now, we now that didn't happen, PDP decided to do what they wanted to do, lost the election. And not only lost the election, they had their party turned upside down, where prominent members of the party, sitting governors, were actually openly working against the party, to the extent that one of their key leaders not only worked against the party, at the end of the process, walked into the government of their opposition. APC won the presidency, and today Nyesom Wike is a minister in an APC government, still a card-carrying member of the PDP, and actually attended their national executive, I hope I'm saying it right, their NEC meeting, was it last week, where they were supposed to, talk about their key positions and try to align on what they were going to do, particularly the national chairmanship, which we know Yoshia IU has been sidelined for a while, and Damagum has been the acting chairman. Now, of course, what we heard from that meeting is that they couldn't, of course, resolve the issues and decided to postpone it till August. What we've also heard is Atiku showed up, and of course, we know that there's this challenge between Atiku and Wike. We've heard that some Northern Caucus folks have sided with Wike and pushed back against Atiku, and so on and so forth. So it's quite a very messy scenario in my view. The one key point I will make is that the idea that Wike can continue to be a member of that party and actually be seen as somebody who is a leader of the party and can show up at that meeting is unbelievably strange to me, that all of the people who could work against the party in the last election. Now, I understand, and I was one of those who said the idea of giving their ticket to Atiku was wrong. But once they had then made that decision as a party to go against the party in that manner and not be punished, of course, you are sending a message. So the crisis they're in has only just started, as far as I'm concerned. Especially that we are seeing Atiku is still showing interest and wants to come again in 2027. So it looks like they will continue to have drama, and this is just the beginning.
Thank you, Phoenix. Atiku, I need to bring you in at this point. What a coincidence that you and the PDP's candidate have the same name, Atiku. So, what I'm trying to understand, using my layman's hat, is why is the PDP incapable of taking action against Nyesom Wike, Seyi Makinde, Samuel Ortom, and the other ex-governors who opposed the party during the 2023 elections? Why can't they expel them?
Well, I mean, that's been the antecedent of the PDP itself. If you recall, who are the people that will expel them? They were also accused of doing the same thing some few years back. So you have a party where a dog-eat-dog system operates within the party. If you recall, the Atiku camp did the same thing to the Jonathan when Jonathan was in government. They backstabbed him. Of course, they were even open about it, and then they did that, and then they lost the election. That said, I think the problem with the PDP is that the PDP had, I think they've overstayed their welcome. They've overstayed their welcome. I mean, if you look at the southeastern part and you look at the south-southern region of the country, they've historically won those places without significant work. But fortunately for them now, there's now a serious, and because of that, they assumed coming into this last election that they could just wave those ones away. And they were running after, I'll call it, they were running after a base that did not exist. They were more interested in winning the election. I recall a whole lot of people, they say, oh, I remember some PDP members saying, "No, PD. I mean, the election is not a charitable event. Election is ABC. The people were making utterances and all those things." And then also their base that left, that were disgruntled, that left the party, rather than actually pour cold water on that boiling steel and make things calm. They were more interested in using what you call the shame concept. Oh, you can't win election. You can't do this. You can't do that. Assuming that they have an understanding of how the new generation of voters in Nigeria will follow. I mean, if you look closely at Nigeria, the young people in Nigeria happens to be the substantial voting bloc that the PDP have not been able to look at and been able to. So my take here is simple. The crisis is just that it's sad when you look at it in the core itself, because if we look at the positive economic growth that has happened in Nigeria in the last 30 years, it can directly be linked to this empathy. But unfortunately, they allowed, I'll call it, some ego issues get over them. They think they understand Nigerian better than Nigerians. They feel they can override on Nigeria. They think they can do anything. They were not interested in the concept of equity. They felt inclusiveness is of no essence. The most important pillar is let's just win this election and get over with it. And they have failed to do that. So my take here is simple. I mean, we could double down and look at people like Wike, just like you have asked, Seyi Makinde. Well, these are people that, how can you be in the opposition and you're serving in a government and you are supposed to play the role of an opposition? Meaning that you're already part of the government, because I don't understand how that dynamism works. And the whole concept of opposition is to actually give us alternative. So if you're the leader of the party, is already part of those, is already in an integral part of the government on ground, meaning that you agree with virtually everything they are doing, then what is the essence of the opposition? So personally, I don't see PDP as more of a serious party going forward. To be candid with you, I'm not sure I will vote for PDP again in my lifetime. And I've known a lot of people that say that they are done with PDP forever, except maybe something remarkable happened to that party. But personally, on my own level, it will take more than normal to repair the image and the abuse that the PDP has subjected the sensitivity of Nigeria to during this last election. I think it's an unforgivable action that they took. Wanting to extend, they want a region of the country, particular region in the country, to continue to rule the country forever and create a crisis of identity in the country. I think that's a situation that you should never forgive, and I don't think I'm ready to forgive them for that.
Thank you, Atiku. Phoenix, what are the implications for Nigeria's democracy if the PDP is effectively crippled, where you have prominent members of the party openly supporting the incumbent administration? How does that impact our democracy or even the 2027 elections?
I think it has a detrimental impact on the democracy, because I think it's just part of the win at all costs, zero principles, zero ethos that we see. I catch myself because I catch myself because, again, I'm drawing parallels to the US elections, right? The last time in 2020, we saw a number of Republicans who chose to work against the election of Donald Trump. The re-election of Donald Trump, because they believe that it was bad for the country. So they in their view, they were choosing the country ahead of their party at that point in time. But these were not senior, I won't say they were not, I mean, these were long time Republicans, but they were not holding office either in the party or elected representatives of the party. I think the issue that we have with the PDP members who not were doing it for their own personal interest, and they did not step away from being in the PDP. They were in the party and they were undermining the party. And for me, that sends a wrong signal in the sense that it did not show principles. It did not show a clear disagreement to say, no, we disagree with you on this purpose because we believe that this is bad for the country. And so we're stepping away and this is what we will do. I mean, Wike particularly chose to remain in the party, work against his party in a most dastardly fashion, and then accepted a position in the opposition party's government while still holding the card of the PDP and attending their. I'm sorry, how does that help democracy? What kind of message are you sending to people that, anything goes, there are no principles, you can just do whatever you like and get away with it. Why are we then worried? Why do we then complain when we see wanton corruption, when we see all this criminality, abound? People are, I mean, young people are watching and seeing, these kinds of behavior, and that's what they think is okay. And so, unless that is dealt with, you are creating a society where people simply, believe that, power is might, and, as long as they, or whether or if they have access to government funds, they can do whatever they want. And the PDP itself has shot itself in the foot. It just said, Atiku say he would never vote for them. There are many that I know who before were staunch, they showed up to the ballot to vote for the PDP, who will not touch them with a 10-foot pole simply because, the what they see of the party does not fill them with hope that even if they replace the APC, they will be any different. Can anyone tell me that a party led by Wike will be any different from what, in any case, the Wike is in the APC government anyway? So, so when you think about all those things, it surely is not a good thing for the Democrats. Now, there are those who would say, but you need the PDP, you need a counterpoint to the APC, we cannot afford a one-party state. No, we won't have a one-party state. The problem of Nigeria is the Nigerian electorate. The day they choose to own their destiny and and do what needs to be done, we won't have a one-party state. But we don't need PDP to save Nigeria if this is the way the PDP intends to show up.
Thank you, Phoenix. The final question on this topic will then go to you, Atiku. So, in your view, what role can or how can perhaps the Labour Party take advantage of this crisis within the PDP? Or do you think the Labour Party is even capable of taking advantage of the PDP's crisis?
Fortunately, also the Labour Party is also riddled with its own crisis, which we expected anyway. I think the last election, a lot of issues were masked, and then we clearly put some plaster over cracked walls within the Labour Party because people were just looking for alternative to the PDP. But I'm suspecting that about now that the Labour Party seen itself that Nigeria had actually they've been able to win some state, and then of course if you look at public opinions about the state that they won, they seem to be doing well there, and they have potential of becoming even this main opposition party in the country. But unfortunately, you have a lot of corrupt elements even within that same party. The level of transparency in the party is weak. The governance system is not there. The mobilization power is not there. If you look at them, they are not even, aside from the fact that maybe Peter Obi is the one you see running around and trying to build things, building something around, everything weaves around him. But for a party that wants to win at the national scale, everybody's hand should be on deck. Unfortunately, that's not the case itself. And I'm not sure they are ready to. Everybody's just looking at what they can grab, what they can steal, what they can get from the system, how they can enrich themselves, rather than actually looking at what is it, what is in it, of course, for Nigeria, for the working poor, they have not. I'm afraid to say that, yes, I think, yeah, while the party itself did well in the last election, I think that success can be linked to a former PDP member. That left the party, and then people saw him as an alternative to what is going on. Unfortunately, aside from his own work that you see him doing, I've not seen the party taking concerted effort, number one, to mobilize more membership, to get to actually attract these Gen Z people. Remember, the people that vote, in fact, we estimate that roughly about 40% of people that will vote in the next upcoming election will be these young people that they've never had voters' card. Have you seen Labour Party talk about mobilizing voters? That's not their business. Their business is how do we share money? How do we steal position? It's okay to say that they are not so a serious party, to be candid with you and to be honest. The direction of travel does not look nice for Nigeria at all.
Thank you, Atiku. But we need to go to our final topic, which is Yahaya Bello, the former governor of Kogi State. Phoenix, what is happening? I thought Yahaya Bello was a close ally of the president, Bola Ahmed Tinubu. What has led to this EFCC assault on his residence and attempted arrest?
Well, his time was up, I guess. I don't really know the backstory, but we know that I mean, there was always a case, with the EFCC, and the issue was whether it was politically expedient to pursue the case or not. And as we know, when you fall out of political favor, the EFCC suddenly remembering that you have issues is always a signal for everyone to know that that has happened. We know that there's a case of 84 billion naira money laundering case against Yahaya Bello, which came before Justice, is his name Justice Nwite or something? I can't remember his name properly. And all of a sudden, the judge issued an order for him to be arrested, and the next thing we hear was that the security detail around him were withdrawn. I don't know why he still had a security detail, being an ex-governor. But and then there was a siege laid to his residence to have him arrested. So I think it's clear to everyone that it's either that he has. He needs to be it's either he needs to be brought in line, and so someone is deciding to send him a message, or he has done something that has really pissed the powers that be off, and they've decided to go after him in the way that we've seen Nigerian leaders go after their people that they're not happy with. So we wait to see how this all pans out for Mr. Yaya. I think it's about time. There's no doubt that he has been one of those characters under the APC who has abused office, and there's no doubt that his cup has been full for quite some time. So even if it's coming through, even though the means may not be best, I think it's about time that he has his own day to answer for all of the things that he has done.
Thank you, Phoenix. Simon Atiku, the question that everybody's been asking is, how did he escape? Apparently, they had laid siege on his premises. Then the police were supposed to be guarding his house, but somehow the incumbent governor or his successor came in, rescued him with his own security, and took him away. And then the federal government, who is supposed to be in control of all the security forces, the attorney general on behalf of the federal government issued a statement saying Yahaya Bello should have been law-abiding and surrendered himself. Can you explain to us if this makes any sense, or if there's something we've missed in this story?
I mean, a classic case of what lawyers we call high crime and is it misdemeanors? How do you pronounce it? That governor himself should get article of impeachment immediately for aiding and abetting crime. Yahaya Bello, we have all known from history that Yahaya Bello is a complete criminal. and he has no space to actually be working free. In decent society, he will be behind bars as we speak. So I think kudos to EFCC for actually trying to bring him to book. Now, unfortunately, I think that's the big fear that we always have in Nigeria, and that's what people that think about the role of state police, and that's the argument they've always used. Now, imagine what would have happened if Kogi State had state police. What would he have done? They would have turned it into a battle, right? A war within a country because you want to save a criminal. That shows the level of decadence. And it shows the layer and how the how you know when you when you when you elevate thugs and touts into position of authority, of course you get this kind of abnormal. It's very, very, although it's becoming normal in Nigeria, but this is an abnormality. It's not normal for people to behave in such way. The first thing is that Yahaya Bello needs to, I mean, we are talking about 86 billion naira for crying out loud. If you know the budget of, I mean, Kogi State, and you know how backward the state had been put, I mean, the state is actually struggling. People are poor, people are hold salary for months without being paid. And then there's this one that stole 86 billion of the Commonwealth. I mean, that's the allegation of the Commonwealth of the people of Kogi State. And the custodian of that Commonwealth is sending in his own orderlies to rescue him from the claws so that he doesn't face the law. He doesn't account for what he has done. He shows the thinking behind it all. These people don't win election. It is Mohammed, what is his name again? It's the INEC chairman himself that elevates these people to the position of authority, and that explains it all. My take here is simple. I think he needs to answer for his crime. I'm happy that, yes, at least for once, the Nigerian police had withdrawn the security attaché around him. Sorry about that. I think they should take it one step further and withdraw the one for the governor also. If they can't act within the ambit of the law, they are listening to the governor and taking action outside the bounds of their state. Shows clearly that they are not serious people. I mean, it's a big disgrace, a national disgrace to hear that happening. And I think the governor of the state should actually, I mean, they should be preparing impeachment article against him, and then he should be facing the music to explain why he took the action that he's taking. Regardless of that, because he enjoys immunity, in 4 years' time, if Nigeria is a serious country, he should, in fact, be charged to court for obstruction. And many other factors, I mean, so that it will be made that, I mean, it's not enough to actually hold people and throw them to jail for 6 months because they are spraying money. This is what you call when you abuse the constitutional authority, you abuse the constitution of the country, you should pay for the music. Those are the kind of crime we want to see prosecuted in Nigeria. And that's why I've always said that the justice system in Nigeria needs a complete overhaul. We need to get to a point whereby we begin to elect attorneys, so that people become responsible to the people. I know, yeah, there are corruption issues around how we elect people, but if we have the opportunity of, let's say, electing district attorneys in Nigeria, and then we know that those district attorneys will have to take over the role of prosecuting idiots, yes, I think we need to get to that point in the country.
Thank you, Patiku. The final question goes to Phoenix. Phoenix, some would argue that actually the fact that Bola Tinubu has decided, or Bola Tinubu's administration has decided to prosecute a former APC leader for corruption, is evidence of the fact that he's taking this battle seriously, and there are no, as they say in Nigeria, no sacred cows in his pursuit of good governance. How would you respond to that?
Well, I mean, it's not the first time, is it? I mean, Alhamis here was prosecuted by OBJ, and there are many more other examples of, party members being prosecuted under their party. So there's nothing that he's doing that tells us that it's a strong show of corruption. Let's see a truly independent EFCC go after more people, because even the Tinubu himself and the way he came to power, let's see them do stuff about that. Let's see them do things about, a number of people in his government who have issues. So I'm sorry, he's not earning any kudos for this action that he's taking, that we clearly know probably has certain political connotations that is different from trying to serve the people of Kogi and ensure that money that was looted from them goes back to them. So, as far as I'm concerned, this is just one of those self-serving actions.
Oh, thank you very much, both of you. But our time is up. So, first of all, I must say thank you to our listeners for always taking time out of your busy schedules to listen to our conversations. Thank you, Atiku, for being our guest. Thank you, Phoenix, for co-hosting. But until same time next week, I say have a fantastic 7 days to everyone.
Thanks, Michael. Thanks, Atiku. Thank you, listeners. Have a great week, everyone.